Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm your host, Albert Morales, and this morning's conversation is with Jock Scharfen, Deputy Director of U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services. Also joining in our conversation is Dave Abel, Director of Homeland Security Services at IBM. Jock, as a result of a comprehensive fee review, which we began to talk about in our first segment, USCIS has sought to adjust the immigration benefit application and petition fees of the examination's fee account. What prompted this comprehensive fee review, and what are some of the examples of fees that applicants will be paying under this proposed structure, and when will they become effective?
Al, this has been the subject of some intense public debate, and we've gone up to Capitol Hill and testified before some House committees on this. And the fee review was prompted by a number of things. First of all, the president in his FY 2007 budget request directed that the USCIS reform its fee structure. A second reason was that the Government Accountability Office, the GAO, had done a report for both the House and Senate Judiciary Committees that concluded that fee structure that we currently are operating under was insufficient to fund our operations. In other words, we were operating in the red every year because the fee was inadequate to cover our operations. And the GAO recommended that we do a new fee study to make sure that the fees covered operational costs. And then finally, there's a legal requirement under the Chief Financial Officers Act of 1990, which in 2004 began to apply to the DHS, requires that fee-based agencies have a fee review every 2 years. But really, what's driving this, the reality of this, is that we are not covering our current costs. We fall short hundreds of millions of dollars of our actual costs. The backlog numbered up to 3.4 million just back in 2004. That backlog was building because we did not have the fees coming in to be able to pay for both the processes and the manpower to work out those applications in a timely fashion. Another reason why we need to do the fee rule is that all the new security steps that we're taking, the different integrity measures that we're taking, have not been funded. Those were all new requirements that we placed on ourselves that are not being funded because the last major fee study was back in 1998. So in between the last major study, we had 9/11 and the requirement of all these national security measures, and they're unfunded. And this leaves us short hundreds of millions of dollars.
So can you expand a little bit more on the details of the overall impact of this fee increase? And you referenced a statute. So will USCIS then be conducting these fee reviews on a more regular basis?
That's correct. Every 2 years, we're committed and we're required by law to do a new fee study and to ensure that the fees are meeting the costs of our current operations. We have a new staffing model. We have a new fee model that we're using that's a more nimble analytical tool. And we'll be able to, we think, as we go forward here, have a fee adjustments that will reflect the actual costs of our doing business, and it will be better for the public. But to give you some examples of what we're talking about here, to give our listeners a little bit of context of what this means, I'll just start with the average increases here. Right now, we have an average increase if you take the weighted average of the application. And that's the way you get that is you take the volume, the mass volume of applications, and we'll call that about 4.7 million, and then divide that by the total projected costs of processing those, which would be roughly $2 billion. That comes out to a weighted average of about $491 per application. Compared that with the current one, which is $264, that's the average fee for an application, you get an increase of $227. But when you start taking a look at that, in the individual applications, it's not always that great. And if you indulge me here, I'm going to throw out a few more numbers and I'll run through what's a highly used application. It's a big, if you will, a business line of USCIS or the I-485s, which is the adjustment of status application. Today, an applicant, when they file an I-485 or an application to adjust status, they would apply or make an application using this form. They pay $325 to do that. However, in the course of their waiting, they'll frequently end up having to apply for an employment authorization, which is called an I-765, or they'll apply to travel. They need a travel document, and that would be an I-131. When they apply for these other benefits, Al, they have to also pay a fee. When you add that up, it comes to about $800. What we plan on doing is charging one fee at the beginning. So when you apply for an I-485, when you want to adjust your status in the United States, in the future, if the rule goes through and as we propose it, you would make one application and you'd make one fee. You'd pay one time, and that would be $905. But I would like to add here, Al, is that we're not insensitive to the fact that no matter how you slice this, these are significant fee increases. And we realize, and we don't take lightly our proposal on this, and that these are not insignificant fee increases. And we are receiving our public comments as we get through this, and we've gotten some very good ones. We realize that we have a responsibility to the public to make sure that we look at those comments carefully and that we have the fee scheduled down properly. Then the flip side of that is that when we go forward, and we hope that we will be able to go forward with a final fee regulation, that we provide better services to the public.
So just as a quick clarification, so the $905 that you reference is sort of like a projected life cycle cost. And so you're sort of providing a convenience by bundling that together.
I think that's exactly the way to think of it, and I'll start using that now, life cycle costs.
Okay.
Jacques, when you were talking about the fees, you mentioned that one of the purposes of increasing the fees was to make sure that CIS has sufficient resource in order to be able to meet its mission going forward. There's a big debate going on right now about immigration reform. Is CIS ready today to be able to accept the impact that will be created by immigration reform if a temporary worker program does come into existence?
I would say yes. We've been planning for this, Dave, for some time. However, much of what we have to do will be dependent on what type of bill we get. We are working carefully, the administration and USCIS, working very carefully with the different committees on the Hill to make sure that we're communicating what's operationally feasible, and so that whatever bill comes out of the Congress, we hope it'll be something that will be feasible in terms of the operational side of it. And we're working very well and cooperatively with the Congress to try to get those parts of it as right as we can. But it will be a big lift. We're talking about 12.5 million applications. And if you take a look at our current annual business, we do about 7 million applications on average a year. On top of that, Dave, we'll go from 7 to 12.5 million. It will not be an insignificant management and leadership challenge.
I would imagine one of the things that makes growth of demand like that so difficult to be able to meet is the manual paper-based environment in which you currently operate. Can you tell us a little bit about CIS's Integrated Digitization Document Management Program?
Yes. This is part of our effort to move from a old paper-based system. To give our listeners a mental image maybe of what we're dealing with here, we have approximately 100 million paper records in our systems, Dave. And we have different records facilities around the country. Some of them are quite large. They're just boxes and boxes. Well, we have records facilities that you look on it and they go on forever. That's fraught with extra expenses and dangers, the misfiling of a record and trying to manage those. And it's very labor intensive and it's just not efficient. It's not congruent with our current capabilities. We should be electronically adjudicating cases. That's what this program is designed to do. It's made up of two parts. The first part, we have a records digitization facility, and that exists to scan or convert our paper-based A files, those are alien files, into a digitized format. And then with that, we have a management system that will store, manage, and provide access to the digitized files to our organization. And the benefits of this will be we hope to have just-in-time electronic file delivery operation. It'll make it easier to share information within the Department of Homeland Security with our components. For instance, you can understand ICE in enforcement actions need to have access to our files. It'll be faster. We'll get rid of shipping costs as well. And then finally, it reduces significantly the danger of misplaced files.
So it sounds like a lot of the results of this particular program will help folks within CIS and within the Department of Homeland Security to more effectively manage a case or manage a file. Are there activities that you're doing electronically that focus on the immigrant or those that are applying for benefits as well, such as online applications or telephone support? Are there customer-facing activities that you're enabling as well?
Yes. We want to expand our e-filing capability significantly. Among our users of the immigration system, we get different requests. For instance, our business users really want us to increase e-filing because they're comfortable with making a computer-based electronic application. Some of the immigration community-based organizations are less enthusiastic by that. We try to do two things. We're trying to be sensitive to both needs there. We want to increase our electronic filing. But in the interim, as we move forward with increasing electronic filing opportunities for immigrants making applications, we want to tie this into also including with that the ability to make a paper-based application until people get more comfortable. We'd like to do this in a number of ways. One, we're working with the Treasury Department, and they have a great system called the Lockbox Operations. And they specialize in taking in large numbers of applications, taking in the money, as well as setting up electronic filing systems, because the banks that work with the Treasury Department that takes in the money, it's in their business interest to make it as easy as possible to take in the application forms. And they'll set up, they're expert at it, new e-filing application forms for us. And so we get to leverage that and perhaps save some money and keep costs down for the immigrants making applications by using these different lockbox contracts to have an expansion of our e-filing systems.
Chuck, we opened the show with you describing one of the greatest challenges is the support of our nation's security. Could you elaborate on improvements USCIS has pursued in such areas such as background checks, fraud detection, and worksite inspections to meet current and emerging threats to the integrity of the immigration system?
Yes. We've done a number of things, Al, to try to improve our ability to ensure that we meet our obligations to the American public on national security. I believe under the Director Gonzalez's leadership is that he set the right tone. I think the principles and the missions emphasis that are made by the director are very important, and people pick up on that. They want to do what the director has laid out, and he has made it very clear that national security is the central goal of his. He likes to say there's a reason that USCIS is in the Department of Homeland Security, and that's because of national security. We've emphasized to our employees that national security is important, and I think that that can't be overemphasized, the importance of that. The other thing is, though, is what we've organized for national security. We've created just this last fiscal year a new national security directorate, and part of that is also one of the sub-offices that is a fraud detection office. They are dedicated to looking at the different areas of national security and fraud, both to study our vulnerabilities and then to seek out enhancements. And I'll give you just a couple of examples. We've got now been authorized to hire an additional 400 immigration officers. We've are in the process of already doing that and deploying them out into the field, who will concentrate on the research and analysis and other aspects of detecting fraud throughout our application pool. They, for instance, do benefit fraud assessments. They did an assessment on religious worker fraud And we took some of the statistics from that, which were very telling. We've made some policy changes and operational changes in order to try to preempt some of the fraud that we saw with the religious workers. We have increased our site visits where we go out and we might make sure that if someone is making an application as a religious worker, that the person sponsoring that applicant, that the church actually exists, that it's not a fraudulent storefront and that it's not just a front. We hope to get out a proposed rule that will tighten down some of these processes even further. On the national security side, we have been careful to ensure that we do fingerprint checks and national security checks. We take 10 fingerprints, we run it to the FBI and run it through the FBI fingerprint checks. We also do name checks and we run it through the FBI databases to ensure that the individual isn't on, for instance, a terrorist watch list. We have procedures to make sure that we handle that appropriately.
Great. What are USCIS's efforts to build an immigration service for the 21st century? We will ask Jock Scharfen, Deputy Director of U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services within the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, to share with us when the conversation about management continues on the Business of Government Hour.